KNOM Update News. I'm Anna Rose MacArthur, and it's 9:02. The Obama administration announced yesterday more than 7 million Americans signed up for health insurance on government-run marketplaces by Monday's enrollment deadline. In Alaska, the final numbers aren't in yet. The two insurers on the state's federally run marketplace are reporting they had 7,500 enrollees by mid-March. Jeff Davis knew the healthcare rollout would be rough, but looking back on the six-month enrollment period that began October 1st, the president of Premier Alaska says he's failed to anticipate just how rough.
We didn't expect it to be smooth, but we didn't expect it to be quite this exciting, shall we say.
Part of that excitement was a last-minute Obama administration change that allowed some Premier Alaska members to keep plans that were supposed to be canceled. Davis supported the move, but he says it forced the company to scramble. And then there was the bungled healthcare.gov rollout in October. Davis thinks that gave a lot of people a good reason to put off enrolling indefinitely.
Everyone was waiting for that October 1 date, and when it came and went and no one was enrolled, we really lost a lot of momentum.
By mid-March, Premier had 4,300 new Alaska enrollees on and off the exchange. Before healthcare.gov launched, the company had conservatively estimated more than double that number. About 10,000 people would sign up. Davis says the numbers are disappointing.
That's not what we were hoping for. We were hoping more Alaskans would find a way to get covered. I think that we'll see eventually it will end up where we expect it to be, but it's just not going to happen in 14. It'll happen in 15 and 16.
The other insurer on Alaska's marketplace is Oregon-based Moda Health. Jason Gotee is the company's regional manager in the state. As of mid-March, Moda had 5,200 new enrollees in Alaska. He says that number seems low given that 130,000 Alaskans are uninsured.
It's actually a pretty small number compared to what might be out there. So I think that part of it is a little bit disappointing. But in terms of market share that we've been able to bring on, I think we've been happy with what we've gotten.
Gotee says after the slow start to enrollment, December was a big month. The company, which also insures customers in Oregon and Washington, wasn't prepared for the enormous spike in enrollments towards the end of the year.
Just to give you an example, as a company, not just in Alaska, but as a company, on December 30th, we took just over 50,000 calls in one day. And for us, historically, a busy call day would have been about 5,000 calls.
Gotee says Moda learned a lot of lessons that will apply during the next open enrollment period, which begins November 15th. Until that date, there are other issues to work out. Neither Moda or Premier has received any money from the federal government for the subsidies many customers qualified for. Premier's Jeff Davis says the company is prepared to cover the subsidy amounts, but hopes the payments will be made soon.
As far as I know, there's still no mechanism for us to receive the subsidies from the federal government. There's just a lot of work still on the back end that wasn't done as part of open enrollment that still needs to be completed.
Both companies will have to file their health insurance rates for next year before they have much information on how new customers are using their insurance. Those rates are due at the end of April. Alaska fish are being tested for radiation contamination from Japan's leaking Fukushima nuclear energy plant. The power plant was damaged during an earthquake 3 years ago and continues to release radioactive water into the sea. Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation State Director of Environmental Health, Elaine Bussey-Floyd, says samples of Alaska fish have been submitted to a Federal Food and Drug Administration testing program.
We were able to just encourage the FDA to add 20 samples of Alaskan fish to their annual monitoring program to specifically look and test fish for radionuclides.
Floyd says each Alaska fish sample is made of multiple flesh samples from various species, including halibut, pollock, sablefish, and salmon, including Copper River and Bristol Bay stocks. The samples were sent to an FDA testing lab in Massachusetts in March, the first time Alaska fish has been submitted for testing. The action follows public concern that prompted the Fairbanks City Council and North Star Borough Assembly to pass resolutions last month urging the state and federal governments to investigate Fukushima radiation in Alaska. Assembly resolution sponsor John Davis pointed to history in advocating for more information.
The troubling thing is that this type of situation follows a pattern. It's the same pattern that happened after Chernobyl, the same pattern that happened after Three Mile Island, and in fact going clear back to the atomic test days of the 50s.
Davies said in the previous incidents, Alaskans found out about radiation issues after an initial lack of concern. He says a search for answers on the state website only yielded outdated information.
But nothing, no data specifically about Fukushima. And then we read that there are fish companies that are actually paying to have their samples tested because the market is beginning to tell them that they don't trust.
The state's Floyd points to a federal testing of non-Alaska Pacific fish stocks, as well as Alaska air, water, and marine debris samples that have shown no significant levels of Fukushima radiation.
But I understand that the public feels if you can detect it, it might be an area of concern, but there's a lot of misinformation and fear about radiation out there. And quite frankly, there's more background radiation that we are around every day than what we're at all getting from the Fukushima disaster.
Floyd says results from Fukushima radiation testing of Alaska fish are expected back from the FDA in late April. It's been a month since the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers was set to release its feasibility study on an Arctic deep draft port. The Corps originally set the release for the first week of March. Then in February, they pushed that date by an indeterminable few months. Yesterday, Lorraine Cordova, the project's technical lead, said the new deadline is pegged for July or August of this year. However, in a newsletter released later that day, Cordova lengthened that time frame to the end of the calendar year. The report was originally postponed when the Corps found itself a month from its deadline with an expanded rather than narrowed list of port options. At the beginning of February, the Corps had 23 possible port configurations spread across three sites, Nome, Cape Riley, and Port Spencer. Now in April, Cordova says the iterations remain the same, even though the Alaska Corps has been meeting biweekly with its D.C. headquarters to discuss the project. Meanwhile, Cordova says the Corps continues to collect data from the Nome port to define the region's needs, gathering information such as traffic numbers, vessel dimensions, cargo, and length of stay. The ongoing study is a cost share between the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the State of Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. A group working to revise the Bering Strait region's salmon management plan is meeting this Thursday, and they want all the feedback they can get. Nome and the four tribal organizations based in town are served by a group named the Northern Bering Sea Regional Aquaculture Association, or NOSBRA. Charlie Lean is NSEDC's representative to the association and a marine biologist. He says Thursday's meeting is to get comments from local salmon users on how they want the stocks managed.
This is our effort to get public input on what people's priorities are for salmon on the road system around Nome, and suggestions, even criticisms of what's been done.
Salmon is one of the most contentious issues in Alaska, with the needs of subsistence, commercial, and sport users often at odds. The last comprehensive management plan was drafted after comments were collected in 1995, and the subsequent plan emphasized commercial interest. Since then, a lot has changed. The NOSBRA group is just one of six under the umbrella of the Norton Sound Bering Strait Regional Planning Team, the organization that's ultimately responsible for devising a full salmon plan. Each of the six areas has its own representative tasked with getting input on what the communities in the area want when it comes to salmon. Lane says that's because there are very different salmon needs for different corners of the region.
Well, there's definitely mixed feelings about what the priorities are, and depending on what community you're from, it is a mixed bag.
In the Eastern Norton Sound, for example, where there is a robust commercial harvest, the priority and feedback so far has been reestablishing the declining stock of kings. Users from Nome to Elan have pushed for a hatcheries program, and communities that are still highly reliant on subsistence in the marine mammal harvest have requested less agency and commercial presence. The diversity of users, Lane says, reflects the region's unique position as a crossroads for different cultures and economic systems.
It's cultural as well as food. You know, the act of catching the salmon, preserving the salmon, and caring about how that relates to your children and your grandchildren is a major big thing.
That's part of the reason why, Lane says, officials developing a plan for salmon management need to know what residents in different areas want in order to devise a strategy that fits the region's unique composition. Thursday's meeting is at 5:30 p.m. in Trigg Hall, located inside the Nome Eskimo Community Building, and food will be served. Looking in on the price of gold in New York at this hour, gold is up $11.30 an ounce to $1,292.10 an ounce. Silver is up 29 cents an ounce to $20.15 an ounce, and zinc is at 89 cents a pound. Unofficially, it is 22 degrees outside the KNOM studios, 13 minutes after 9 o'clock. Good morning.